Good evening, Vancouver. Welcome back to Canucks After Dark, Monday, March 4th. We are just days away from the trade deadline, and a trade deadline where we're going to be on the buying side, potentially, as opposed to the selling side, although we don't know how much there's going to be, but that's something that we will get to. As always, joined by my co-host, Canuck Clay. How are you doing this evening, Clay?
I'm great. Canucks a buyer? I've not heard that in maybe forever, at least a decade. But yes, exciting times. I joked around on X that we have 92.8 million things to talk about today. So I know that's our lead story. But another eventful week in the world of Canucks. Yeah, I'm doing well. How about you? Anything exciting? Anything new in Parker's world?
Not really. No. Yeah. No. Went to a terrible hockey game last week.
Hey, I saw you at that terrible hockey game.
Yep. Unfortunately, that was a tough one. A tough one to be at. Did have a great ice cream cone though. Treated myself in the third period.
Highlight of the night.
That was the one highlight.
Yeah. I know we're gonna get to it, but yeah, that made me not want to face LA in the playoffs. Not because we can't beat them. I think we can. It was just a dreadfully boring game. It was horrible.
Yeah, it's like Minnesota at that point. Like, I just don't want to deal with that.
That's how they win.
Yeah, three games for us to get to tonight, but that's not our lead story. Our lead story is, of course, the extension of Elias Pettersson, which came through. Was it Saturday morning? Like 7 a.m. on a Saturday morning, which is lovely for people like me who like to sleep in on Saturday. Waking up at 9 to see that. I was like, oh, wow, I'm behind. But we'll go over that. 8 years, $11.6 million per year. So a nice chunk of change for Elias Pettersson. Of course, we have the three games to go into. Lost to Pittsburgh in overtime. A terrible loss, as we alluded to, against the Kings. And a pretty tidy win against Anaheim from yesterday. And then, of course, we'll talk about the games upcoming this week. Again, only three, I believe, on the schedule. A pretty light week for the Canucks. They go back against LA tomorrow night, in Vegas on Thursday, and back at home against Winnipeg on Saturday.
Light schedule, tough games. Yeah. Light schedule, tough games though, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Shall we, anything you want to get to before we dive right into, I guess, our big topic of the night?
No, let's go.
All right. Travis Green back behind an NHL bench, Lindy Ruff getting fired and Travis Green taking over as interim head coach. But pull up those articles.
No, you started talking on my phone. That was exciting, actually. It was weird.
Oh, wow. So yeah, we'll obviously go to the big news. Elias Pettersson, and this was obviously a big topic for us even last week, right? I think what will you title it? The Canucks break the slump, which was temporary, I guess, with that Boston win, and the Pettersson drama. And all the drama last week was around, you know, are the Canucks going to be able to re-sign Pettersson? He had said consistently that he wanted to wait till the end of the year, but then Friedman had his thing on Hockey Day in Canada where he said, actually, they're getting concerned. There's people calling, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And boy, do we look good after last week.
We're not the only ones that predicted that it was going to happen or anything like that. But I really like our show from last week because I think we did a pretty fair job of leading into it. We tossed around contract value, but we talked about what was happening up until then. And then I guess that was just the start because there's another week of noise. Now that I think about it, when we recorded last Monday, the noise was just starting, but we hadn't heard of the threatened trade to Carolina or anything like that. I think it was just the Saturday, right, where Friedman said teams were calling on PD, and then we recorded on Monday. And then I think the Carolina stuff broke later, wasn't it?
Yeah. But we sort of stayed on the track of, we don't think he's going anywhere. We think he's going to re-sign here. And turns out that is exactly what happened. There was obviously these rumors swirling around and whether that's last talking in Canada, the previous Saturday, where they said, hey, there's, rumors swirling that they're taking calls. And that was a bit of a hiccup to the fun game against the Bruins that the Canucks pulled out. And then of course you have what comes out later in the week. Friedman just drops this article. I feel like it was like Tuesday or Wednesday, maybe Thursday, and he literally just says like on Elias Pettersson. That was the whole, like, it was a whole tweet, and then you go into it and it's like just essentially a bombshell. He's like, yeah, like they've worked out in theory a trade with Carolina. And if, you know, the extension now the extension is pushing through, but if that wasn't going to be the case, then the Canucks seem to have had a backup plan, which to me is like, wow, that is hardcore from this management group.
Yeah. And I don't remember. Okay. So I'll say one thing. Well, I'll say many things, but for this particular point, I think a lot of people jumped on the fact that he almost got traded to Carolina, but I never heard that. I heard that exactly kind of how you said it. They had worked something out. Carolina was certainly interested for them to, I'm sure, initiate it, but we don't know. We've never heard, we've never read a substantiated report that says the Canucks were this close to trading PD or that they even considered it, but it was out there for sure. And if it was, I don't think it was a threat to PD, but it was certainly added to the quote noise that was around that ultimately led to the influences to getting this deal done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a fun narrative for me personally, like looking at that and being like, you know, obviously Patterson has said all year, right? I'm going to wait till the end of the season, which is his right. He's a restricted free agent. He's allowed to do whatever he wants. However, it's a really big deal for this management group because they're not just trying to build a contender for this season, right? They're trying to build a contender for this season and next season and the year after that. And however long that goes down the line, hopefully a while.
Yes.
And not knowing whether or not your star player wants to stay is a big part of that. Because they're looking at this and saying, well, if we, you know, we can trade him now while we have leverage and we don't know what he wants to do. If he wants to leave, let's just trade him now, get some pieces back that we can then use at the trade deadline, flip at the trade deadline, do something with to compete this year and in the years to come, because next year we lose a lot of leverage potentially.
Yep. Yep.
So they went and got ahead of it, seemingly, right? They kept their options open, which we're not used to with our previous management group, where they would run out of time consistently. But they went and they had a plan B and a plan C. And they said, hey, look, what you are doing right now, we understand that you want to wait till the offseason, but we need to build this team out into the future. And I'm sure that was part of their presentation to them, right? Like, hey, we want to build this team into the future so that it's competitive for you to play for, right?
Yes.
Which is something that's been a big deal to him. So I really like that move, you know, saying, hey, like we have things in place. Like we can pivot if we need to. This is your chance to stay here, right? Let's get this deal done like we've been pressing all season.
Total power move by Rutherford. That's the one narrative that I've read, Parker, is Jim Rutherford has the guts. I was going to say something more crude, but he has the guts to do something like that. And he's not afraid. Doesn't he seem like a no nonsense, no BS type of guy? He wouldn't be afraid to just go with his old man strength, so to speak, and make make a statement like that to PD for sure. And I love one thing you touched on that's very important. I think people remember, you guys, this 11.6, it doesn't affect anything right now. He's under contract right now for a 7.35, the last of his 3 years at 7.35. This comes in effect July 1. So what this does, it actually doesn't affect trade deadline in terms of money, but in terms of trade deadline being the launching point for offseason and beyond. Yeah, it completely changes the narrative because now we know X amount of money has to go to PD. I'm sure they ballpark this much, and now they can focus on guys that they have to extend or re-extend or re-sign or trade away or whatever it may be.
Yeah. Yeah. They can figure out what the budget looks like next year. Cause if it was going to be, oh, it's a 1 year qualifying offer, right? That's going to be a lot lower number, right? It would be what, a 10% increase on the 7.35 he makes, something like that.
Something like that
is the rule. So about $8 million.
Yeah.
Whereas now knowing this, that, you know, it's like $3.5-4 million less on the cap that they're going to have to manage, right? Which is not a bad thing. You know, you're keeping your really good player. But it's a nice thing to know, because if you're trying to win it all next year on this last year of the Pettersson contract, right now you have an extra bunch of money to play with, and maybe that factors into the Filip Hronek extension, because that's something that they need to get done, right? They have a bunch of guys who are not a bunch of guys, but they've got some guys who are on expiring contracts that they need to start fitting the money together in, right? Dakota Joshua being the big example in my mind.
I agree.
Right?
He's the biggest.
You look at this defensive group, though, everyone's a free agent. Except Quinn Hughes and Noah Juulsen. Tyler Myers, UFA. Filip Hronek, an RFA. Nikita Zadorov is a UFA. Ian Cole's a UFA. Mark Friedman's a UFA. everybody is a UFA essentially on the defensive side. Elias Lindholm is a UFA, right? And to start doing the math on all these little components, you need to know if you're going to have an extra $11.6 million to do that with next year or not. And this just gives them more time, which in my book is fantastic.
So you wake up, Parker, 9 a.m., and you see the news and you see 11.6 times 8. First reaction.
Oh, that's better than we expected, right? I mean, we came into the year and actually, I think this was one of the questions we did on the poll, potentially, of how many millions of dollars he would get. But I think, you know, at least our thought was, yeah, he's probably going to be around $100 million, right?
Yeah.
12 and a half million, 8 years, adds up to $100 million. Yeah. And he comes in almost $1 million a year less, $900,000 a year less than that value, which, look, in the grand scheme of the salary cap, is that big of a deal? No, right?
Right.
But you do that a few times, right? Good management, people that are good at managing their money, right? That allows you to maybe go out and add a Sam Lafferty one season going into a playoff push or a Puce Suter. You know, you do that four times of guys who are making a little bit less than market value. Maybe you save up $2.5 million on the cap, right? Maybe you can get an Ian Cole, right? Like there's all these options that being shrewd negotiators can open up for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I think to be fair, we have to at least acknowledge that not everyone, like you and I, both really like the contract. We think it's good value. It's gonna be great value as that salary cap goes. Honestly, I think it's gonna be not to the same extent, but we're gonna look at it in the same glowing terms, hopefully, as we do the Quinn Hughes value contract right now. We've got another 3 years at 7.8, which is amazing value. I want to be able to say that about PD 4-5 years in this contract, 4 years in the contract. Wow, we have him at another 4 years for only 11.6. And Parker, they're paying him for not only what he's done, what he's doing, but more importantly, what he can be. He hasn't hit his ceiling yet. And that's something you and I talked about last week.
Yeah. Yeah. It's again, there's only one RFA year on the deal, right? So they're buying seven UFA years. So it's his big contract, right?
It is.
Contract takes him until he's what, 32, 33? Like there's a chance that he drops off a bit by then, right? Like he'll probably have a peak and then he'll come down. I know Dom Lucision tweeted out like his essentially contract projections, right? Like how much value he will provide over the course of his contract, taking into account salary cap inflation over that time and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he's sort of still on this uphill of this age curve. And part of that is the cap increasing. But it does sort of come down at the end, right? Because most players, when they hit 30, 31, 32, they start to decline a little bit.
Right.
But that was a very interesting graph because it sort of showed like next year he'd probably be worth 11 million and then like 11.5 and then like 12, 12.2, 12.3. And then it sort of comes back down, averaging out to about $11.9 million per season over the 8 years. So in theory, based on that model, he should technically exceed that. Like technically it's a good contract, based on that.
Awesome. Awesome. Do you subscribe to the fact, do you think PD could have got more and he left money on the table? Or do you think this is actually we thought it was a bit higher, but maybe this is what they were looking at all along, a bit more than the Nylander contract, right? They made sure that one was done first and I don't know.
For him to make the most money possible.
Yeah.
His move probably would have been, and I'm now looking, his qualifying offer would have been $8.82 million.
Oh, okay.
So probably the way for him to make the most money possible would have been to either get traded and sign an extension right away or to take that QO next year, go into unrestricted free agency, and someone's probably going to pay him 13 at that point. Right. Especially with the cap going up, especially on a free market where every team's involved. I think they did okay here. Like genuinely, I think even if you don't think he's maybe worth $11.6 million per year, that's a ton of money, right? Like, especially when you start comparing it to guys like Connor McDavid, who did sign that contract like 5 years ago, it feels like now, so it's not really a great comparable. Right. And you start comparing it to like Austin Matthews, but he only signed for what, 4 years?
Yeah,
maybe four, five, like
five,
four years. Yeah, it's a short contract, right? You're not getting 8 years of him. You know, you can start to look at it those ways and be like, ah, well, he's not better than Matthews, but it's also, you know, you're getting more years out of that. I like genuinely in this market, I felt like he was going to like, it was going to be a 12 something.
Me too.
But they had, you know, there's ways to negotiate that down. Right. And part of that is going to be, hey, you know, we'll give you a bunch of signing bonuses, which maybe pulls away from escrow a little bit. We'll pay you, you know, a better chunk up front so you can invest it theoretically and make more money over that term. We'll give you that full no move if you, so you have control and if you want to stay here or not in the future. And you know, those are value adds, right? There's also the, you know, like let's do a, if we do a thought exercise, let's say you took that QO next year and then made, and then got, yeah, $7 by $13 million in unrestricted free agency, right? He makes a handful of million dollars more over that time period. But he then has to, you know, move, and he has to, you know, he doesn't, maybe doesn't get as much up front. Maybe he doesn't get a full no move. Although he probably would. But all these little things can sort of add up. Right. The Canucks know that they're able to negotiate that. I think they did a good job.
You get a chance to watch the press conference, the 12-minuter. He seemed so relaxed. He was joking around, pretending he responded to a joke about him being the assistant GM. He just seemed very, and he was very frank too. He said, "Yeah, it started to become a distraction. I'm only human. It started to there was noise." And he basically said he always wanted to be here, yet part of it, he said, "You don't show all your cards right away in negotiation." So he flat out said that he was. He didn't use these terms, but he was playing the game within the game. He wanted to be here, yet he was a smart guy. You're right, Parker. It's his biggest contract. He's got to extract the most value he can, and no one's gonna feel sorry for him that he's only making 96. What's 11.6 times 8? 92.8, as opposed to 100. Yep. 100, but I think he's doing okay.
Yeah, and keep in mind these are U.S. dollars in a Canadian city, right? Oh, taxes good point. Are high. But yeah, you know, that's like $130 million, and who knows what the dollar will be when he's making those payments. But either way, like he gets to live in a very nice city, and he gets to be one of the richest people in that city. You know, it's that's probably a nice living situation. Maybe over a, you know, living in Raleigh and making the same amount, as an example. Nothing against Raleigh, but I'm sure that, you know, he said he's always wanted to be here. And I don't know how much that is backpedaling, if at all possible. I don't think it is. But yeah, I think if he didn't want to be here, he wouldn't have signed that contract, because he could have gotten that money afterwards.
Last question about this, and it's good. We're spending a good 20 minutes on this. We should. It's our lead story. Did you follow all that Chris Gear stuff on X?
I did. I saw it. So yeah, some backstory. He essentially was talking about how like the bridge deal sort of ended up being a good thing, because they're sort of paying him less now than they would have been, and less this year than they would have been if it was long term. So that's why they're able to contend now. And it's just silly, right? Like, and then he even said like, oh, it was sort of, you know, like both camps were wanting a bridge deal. And then of course JP Barry comes out and says, no, the bridge deal was the team's idea. Because that's all they could do, and that's all they had the money for. Because of some poor cap management.
Exactly. Yeah, poor cap management. And then they're only left with enough money. And we both remember this. Both Quinn Hughes and Pettersson were RFAs at the same time, needed new contracts. They chose to go longish, 6, not 8, but at least 6 years, with Hughes at 7.8, and that only left them to afford 7.3. You're not going to get PD long-term at 7.3. So especially if you're giving Hughes 7.8. So that's why they went with the bridge. Exactly.
Yeah. And now what this really opens up is a really clear window, in my opinion, right? We have a team that's in a contending spot in the standings at the very least right now. You have JT Miller locked up forever. You have Elias Pettersson locked up forever. Right. So those are no longer variables in your competitiveness unless they really decline, which I don't see that happening to Miller for a few years. The way he's been playing is unbelievable. And Pettersson, I don't think that happens on this contract, to be frank. Right. Now you start to look at the window the Canucks have. Right. After this year, they have 3 years of Quinn Hughes at $7.85 million.
With what a steal.
Cap increases. Like, that is an absolute bargain right now. Like, he's worth what Pettersson's getting paid at this point. When those two contracts were signed, maybe not, right? Pettersson had the higher ceiling, probably. But right now, Quinn Hughes is right there with him. They also have 2 more years of a Vezina candidate goaltender at $5 million a year, right? When goalies of his caliber could probably be making eight or $9 million a year. So those are, that's sort of your window, right? Besser's got one more year at 6.65. I don't see him getting a huge raise next year unless he scores 40 again next year. But based on his history, you know, who knows? And the rest is, it's really an open book. Tons of free agents coming up right now. You know, you've got Garland for two more years. Mikheyev for a couple more years probably isn't great, but maybe they could get out of that in the summer. But like in my mind, a very clear window has sort of emerged of you have a bona fide Norris caliber defenseman and a bona fide Vezina caliber goalie. Not saying either of them are going to win that trophy per se, but they're in the talks at the very least. Mm-hmm. And you have those combined for under $13 million. And there's a lot. And as the cap goes up, there's going to be a lot of wiggle room to fill out the roster around them.
Oh, I love how you mentioned Quinn Hughes, the core, because another side effect of this long-term signing, Parker, and not a short-term or a refusal to negotiate, is when Quinn Hughes is up in 4 years, is he more inclined now to stay as opposed to bolt to go to the Devils? In fact, I heard it was the other way around, that Petey didn't want to sign long-term because he's waiting for Hughes to become a free agent, and then they together go to New Jersey, whatever. Like, and then you're right, Miller long-term. So, when it comes to Hughes and Demko, you're right. They're in 4 years and 3 years respectively, they have to re-up there. So there's the fact that Petey and Miller, your two top centers, are locked in for the next 7-8 years combined together. That's got to be saying something. Like, that's a commitment. So yes, I agree. Our core right now, our window to win is now. And obviously this team has surpassed all expectations. But to keep that going for the next 2-3 years, at least, to be sustainable while at least Demko and Hughes are under contract, so key. And then hopefully they want to re-sign again when their contracts come up.
Mm-hmm. They're going to be getting big raises, though, right?
They are. Like
we're talking in 4 years, right? Hughes will be, what, 27, 28? He'll be able to get even if it's like a 6-year deal, though, he'll be able to get 12. Or so. And who knows what the cap is then, right? Maybe the cap's $100 million by then, if things go very well over the next few years. Maybe that's $14 million, right? It'll be that same about 14% of the cap that Pettersson got, which is gonna become a sky high number. That's why this 8-year contract to me is so important, right? Like, if they had gone like 4 or 5 years, like Austin Matthews did, for example, now you have to sign him again when the cap is, you know, 15, it's 20% higher, potentially maybe 25% higher, right? From a cap percentage perspective, that Pettersson contract eventually is going to, you know, it's not going to, 11.6 million isn't going to feel like what 11.6 million does now, right? Think back to when McDavid signed that $12.5 million contract and was like, that is so ridiculously high, right? And now you look at it and you're like, man, what a bargain that he's playing on, right? I think, you know, our perspective of these numbers is going to skew over time. Right now, it feels like a lot. But I think in this sort of cap constrained world, I think they did okay.
Yep, I agree with you. So I'd say Canucks After Dark collectively gives this contract at least an A-, if not an A. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They locked their guy up. That was the big thing. And if it was $12 million, I would have been like, sure, that makes sense. If it was... If they had paid 12.8, I would have been like, oh, that feels that's higher than we expected. But hey, at least we got him, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, being 11.6 and just above Nylander, to me, it's like looking at that comp is like, oh, that seems like not a great comp, potentially, right?
For them, you mean.
He's fantastic. But, you know, he's a winger. And that's a big difference maker.
Yeah. All right. What a difference. A difference in a week. But, We're happy. It looks like looking at the chat, I think most people are happy, but I do know there are some naysayers out there, and that's totally fair. Because they see what's in front of them right now. And if you only saw the last 10 games of Elias Pettersson's career, you would not say he's worth 11.6 million. So I get it. But big picture, this is a good move. This is a good move.
Yeah. And Donnie and Dolly did a poll question like right after the contract dropped, and it was just a simple thumbs up or a thumbs down. And it was like 93-7, which...
Yeah.
It's like it's a crazy high number to get that many people to agree on something at all. I just threw a poll in the chat. So if you guys want to vote on that, you can. It's not going to have the same amount of votes, but we're at 90-10 right now, 30 votes. That's, you know, same vein. Absolutely.
Very good. Awesome. I guess we can do, this is good because by doing for 25 minutes on our lead story, we only have to spend 10 minutes max on the last three games.
Yeah. Yeah. We really don't need to spend too much time on a couple of them. While you're all here though, make sure you hit the like button, make sure you're subscribed, do all that good stuff. Yeah, let's talk about some hockey games and then we can go to the people for the last bit. I don't think we have many other topics. I'm trying to think. I had Travis Green one.
Anticipating the trade deadline, I guess, because that is on Friday.
Yeah, I guess. Oh man, it's this week. Yeah, we can talk. We can talk Gensel, Crosby,
if we're Kessel, crazy. If we're talking about Pittsburgh guys.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We can start with Pittsburgh coming to town on, was this Tuesday?
Yeah, it was.
Must have been Tuesday. Again, I'm glad I loaded this one goal beforehand so I can look at the highlight before I talk. This was a cool goal. Nils Höglander opens it up 10 minutes in. Then Besser scores on a power play. We don't need to go too much in, really.
Yeah.
Besser scores shortly after on the power play. Canucks go into the second period with a 2-0 lead. They blow it in the second period. Pens get two. Miller gives them the lead back with a really nice shorthanded goal. Just walks in and rips it. Which is great. Eller ties it in the third period. And then some really abysmal defending, leaving Thatcher Demko to dry, as they get like six good shots off and, Carlson ends up ending it. When a team gets seven shots on you in overtime and overtime
in a minute,
ends a minute and 42 seconds in, that's probably not good.
I don't know what the Canucks were doing. The game-winning goal by Carlson, you only have a minute and 42 of overtime to sum up, but it basically summed up. Garland stumbles while trying it, and now it's at an odd man rush. It's only 3-on-3, now it's 3-on-2 or 2 or whatever. And then after Carl, didn't Demko make an amazing save, and then no one cleared the rebound?
Yeah, he made an unbelievable save, and it was like, oh my goodness, they could then send this the other way, and then they just didn't.
And then Garland wanted to slam his stick on the crossbar, but Miller was there, so Garland had to skate up and then deke around Miller and then slam his stick. Then Miller does his tomahawk chop, so we had two broken sticks by the two Americans. Demko should have done his, make it three Americans. If Hughes was on there, it should be four. But it was it was just a disaster after coming in the third period with a 3-2 lead. Yeah, that's a game they should have won. You're right, Miller's shorthanded goal, that was awesome. Letang was actually pointing to the refs like it was a glove hand pass to himself. So you're allowed to do that. Yeah, he was just, it was a great goal.
It was way cooler than that because he reached behind him and smacked it out of the air.
Yeah.
I think he was arguing for a high stick.
Honestly, oh, okay. Okay.
Because it was sort of like shoulder height and he like reached back and pulled it forward.
Okay. Okay.
That was a crazy cool play. Sucks that this game didn't go their way, but I look at games like this against an Eastern opponent. And genuinely after that game ended, I was like, man, that sucked. I got a point, whatever. And I sort of moved on. Like the losses aren't great, obviously, but when you at least get a point out of them, the way the NHL's set up is it doesn't matter all that much, right? The team's still doing well. So it's frustrating, but it wasn't, it wasn't heartbreaking for the most
That's
part.
That's fair. I agree with you.
What was heartbreaking is going to this game on Thursday. Both of us were there. Both of us saw the Vancouver Canucks have three shots on goal in the first period. Both of us saw a game that had a total of 44 shots in a regular 60-minute hockey game. I remember the first period went by so quickly because so little happened. I don't know if it went by quickly when I was there, but I just remember nothing about it because nothing seemingly happened. I mean, Doughty scores that one goal 13 minutes in on the slap shot, but that nothing happened in the first period. Then I think I saw you at the first intermission and then I texted you and we texted each other like that was the only fun part of the game so far was saying hello to each other.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, Kopitar adds one in the second. Besser gets one back early in the third on the power play, but that doesn't last long. Because Fiala scores the other way. I thought this was offside. Maybe it wasn't this goal. There was one goal that I was like so sure was offside. They didn't challenge it. But who knows? My view was good. Like I was in the center upper bowl, but I was really high up. And there's a bit of an angle on the blue line. And then they just scored a couple more. I left after that last goal, Trevor Moore goal. I don't usually leave early. I'm pretty against leaving early.
Yeah.
But with an effort like that in a 5-1 game, like what am I? I got a train to catch. I'm like, I'm out.
No,
of there.
No wonder I couldn't find you after the game. I actually looked for you, but I should have messaged you to see if you're still there.
I was gone. We sort of looked at each other after the 4-1 goal, and we're like, if like his clock runs down, like we're done. And then they scored again.
Yeah. Yeah. So this game, we don't have to go through the goals for sure, but I want to get what your opinion on one part of the game, Parker. After Besser scored on the power play, finally, the crowd had something to cheer about. And it was so early. It was only 3 minutes into the third. So they basically had the whole third period to work with. The crowd was into it. And finally, we could get something salvage out of this game that started off so boring and so poor. And then, yeah, it was a weak call on Hronek. But then for them to score in that power play goal and the way they did it, do you remember that entry where Ian Cole inexplicably left Fiala open in front of the net and tried to cut off the board play that wasn't even there?
Yeah, that was a nasty pass, though.
It was.
Like, that was unbelievable. But yeah, you can't just lose that guy.
Yeah, but more importantly, my point was, it was just too bad that Hronek, it was a penalty, so he got called, and for them to give up the goals right away, it just, for that 2 minutes of euphoria, or at least the error was in the building, it got deflated right away, and then it was back to how it felt for the...
Yeah, and there was the one that that Besser just didn't skate back and pick his guy up.
Yes. I
don't remember which goal that was. Was that
goal number four? Goal? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, where he just like, it was a very obvious either two on one or 3-on-2.
Yeah, it was 2-on-1 because he was wrong pinched, and then
but Besser it was a staggered 2-on-1 where one guy was going in and the second guy was trailing, where it was very clear, like, if Besser just keeps up with the second guy, there's nothing here. It's effectively a 2-on-2. But he stopped skating, and then it was a 2-on-1. And with a stagger, it's very easy to drop a pass back because the defenseman can't get in the lane.
Yes.
So yeah, that one was frustrating.
I don't know if you remember. Pedersen got checked off the puck, leading to Kopitar's goal, and then he also got checked off the puck, leading to Clark's goal. So he was actually responsible for two of the goals, and this was the last game he played before his contract was announced. So it was just kind of funny that it was such a bad game for him, his final game before his new contract announcement. So
yeah, and in his post game, he even said, like, I'm only taking questions about the game. Right? Yeah. He didn't want any questions contract related. I don't know if they had it in the chamber or anything, and he just didn't want to talk about it. But it was like, with all that smoke and then this going on, like, I could see it being, I sort of heard that. I was like, oh no, that doesn't seem good.
I'm surprised the Canucks put him out there, but I understand. And you were there. You've actually done one of these where the media can request certain players, and the Canucks and PR got to figure out who it's going to be. So someone's got to talk. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Flush it.
Yep. Gone. Fine. We go to, was this Sunday? This was yesterday. Yeah,
a win.
Yeah, and I was all day Saturday. I just assumed there was a Canucks game that night because there just usually is, right? I was like, oh, they played Tuesday and Thursday. Guess they play Saturday. And then like Saturday at like 11, I was like, when do the Canucks play? And I check, I'm like, there's just nothing on the app. So they played Sunday at 5, so an early one, which was very nice. I do enjoy a Sunday 5 o'clock game. It's lovely. Mm-hmm. And this one was pretty dominant. Like, from the Canucks, and pretty low event, even though, like, if you looked purely at the stats, you're like, oh wow, they outshot them 14-3 in the first, 31-18 throughout the whole game. Like, looks like the Canucks absolutely dominated them. It didn't feel like a lot of high danger going either way. Like, Dostal was good, but I don't think the Canucks got a lot of great A's. They just had a good amount of volume. And this first goal the Canucks score a minute and a half in was just perfect. I mean, Filip Hronek, a blind pass from the blue line going across ice to Quinn Hughes. Quinn Hughes with a sweet little move on somebody, just left him in the dust. And then Höglander with a nice little move to kick himself out and give himself a little bit of space. He should not have time to like wind up a wrist shot there ever from, 12 feet from the net at most. And a perfect shot. He just roofs it. This was a very sweet way to start this game.
Yeah, and it was the first shot of the game for the Canucks, and it was coming on the heels. Yeah, of a dominant shift by that relatively new PD Höglander. It was Suter, right? That was with him. Yeah. And the two defensemen, you're right, combining that wonderful. Yeah. So actually, you're right about the overall. This game was not a high event game at all, but I thought it was going to be after scoring just a minute and a half in on your first shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then the Ducks did get one back. That Killorn goal, what a fluky play. Like a shot that, you know, a shot from essentially the top of the faceoff circle, just inside the faceoff circle on the right hand side, and it just gets deflected and goes directly to Killorn, who's at the bottom of the faceoff circle. Oh. And obviously the goalie's squaring up to the one shot, and then suddenly the puck's over here with a wide open net. Yeah. So that, honestly, like Casey DeSmith, great bounce back game, especially having to sit on that Minnesota game for that long.
Oh,
to go out there, stop 17 out of 18 with the one goal he allows being, you know, one that he really couldn't have been prepared for.
Sure.
Which was fantastic.
I just got scared. I just got scared because just as we scored on our first shot, that was their first shot. So I was like, oh no, I hope it's not going to be one of these type of games, another Minnesota game. But you're right, DeSmith was great. And I heard a stat, and this probably bears out the eye test too, that the Ducks only had four scoring chances, or I don't know if they're high danger, even just scoring, good scoring chances for the entire game, which kind of checks out.
That seems really low.
Maybe it's four high danger, but I heard four.
Okay, so in all situations, they have it at 11-5 in favor of Vancouver. 5-on-5 was 10-4.
Maybe that's what
only
it was
11 isn't that crazy. What's more interesting to me is shot attempts. Corsi 60-46, like a lot more close than 31-18 on the shots feel. But either way, a pretty dominant game from the Canucks. Then they score this one early in the second period when the shots are 16-4, which is usually a good sign. Miller drops it back to Zadorov, who has been so good lately. And Connor Garland is going to the net. The vision on Zadorov to pass this, like, somehow at Garland's back skate. It's, he can't go, you know, Garland's right-handed and Garland's driving to the net, with Zadorov on the right point. So you would think Garland would go stick in front of him on the backhand and go for the tip that way. But there's a guy blocking that passing lane perfectly. So Zadorov takes what he can get and sort of fires it back between the legs of Garland, and Garland reaches back. It ends up being rated as front skate, something you wouldn't be able to tip, but he like sort of bends backwards and just like creates an angle somehow to get this over the goalie. That was a sweet, sweet play.
That, yeah. Oh yeah. Actually, I'm just looking at it now. Oh yeah, that's right. The way that Garland had to reach. That's a really, really good point. Yeah. Zadorov's been, it's like they told him a week ago, play decent defense, but start skating, like just start having fun, because he's starting to activate and create a lot more in the offensive zone.
Yeah, he's got good enough wheels. He's got so much length that he's able to just keep the puck away from people pretty well. It's been fun to watch.
Yeah. Now, so that was early, Parker, in the second period. I got a chance to watch this at an airport flying home from Spokane. Did you? I'm not just saying this because we ended up winning. Hindsight 2020. Blah blah blah. I was not worried. Just the way Anaheim was playing, I wasn't worried at all, actually, that the Canucks were going to lose.
Yeah, I had the little twinge just because they have been blowing third period leads more lately, right? Sure. After going their first 26 without it, they've been sort of like 500 since when going into third periods with leads. But they really didn't let them create anything. I mean, two high danger chances in the third period. It didn't feel like the Ducks were like pressing in any way, right? Normally the score effects take over in a game like that, and one team will have like, it'll be like 15-7 the shots in the third period as one team ramps up, they pull the goalie, do all this stuff. The Ducks really just didn't have that. They didn't have that final push that they needed.
Speaking of which, pulling the goalie, I caught the last 2 minutes. I'm sitting there waiting for a plane to taxi, and I'm just making sure I was able to see it. They were so non-urgent. I don't know what the word opposite of urgent is, but they had multiple opportunities to to pull their goalie, and they didn't. They didn't even aggressively skate up ice. And then, speaking of nonchalantness, then Lindholm has a brilliant opportunity to take two steps and get it over the line, and he inexplicably passes it back to the middle. So the Canucks actually didn't clear the puck for the last minute of the game, but Anaheim at the same time did absolutely zilch with it. It was weird. It was just
they sat around passing the puck for the last 25 seconds, and I don't think they got a shot. And like they had possession until like 2 seconds left when someone shot it over the boards, and they said, "No, we're good. The game's over. You weren't doing anything anyways." They just didn't have it. Like there was just no threat whatsoever,
unless they, you know, they really want to stay at the bottom and. Oh no, they're still 12 points. As bad as Anaheim is, they're 12 points up in Chicago. That's crazy.
Yeah, Chicago's bad.
They're so bad. Wow. Wow. Okay. Good. So 1-1-1. That's the definition of 500 right there.
Yeah. It's not great, but it's also not gonna hurt them too much. You know, the standings right now, President's Trophy wise, not looking great. They've had some teams make a push here, right? The Panthers are 3 points up with a game in hand now. The Bruins are 1 point up. The Jets are 2 points back with three games in hand. The Stars are just 2 points back. The Oilers are 9 points back with four games in hand, right? So there's the Canucks probably aren't winning the President's Trophy, right? No. I'm sure their odds on that aren't very high, but there's a good chance they still win the Pacific Division.
I agree. And right? It's funny, they could win the Pacific Division and face the Vegas Golden Knights in the first round, the way Vegas is going.
Yeah. So what's interesting, looking at the Athletics playoff odds, they have the Canucks at a 60% chance to win the division still.
Okay.
Edmonton at 34, mm-hmm. LA at 4, Vegas at 1.
Okay.
So their odds don't like Vegas right now. And it makes sense. LA has two games in hand. Vegas has lost three in a row. They've only won two of their last 10. They are faltering.
And
they have Vegas at a 49% chance of finishing fourth in the division. It's essentially 30-45 between them and LA, right?
Yeah.
For those two spots. And then of course there's like the last 25% is spread out, in case like Calgary makes a push or something.
Yeah.
So it's looking like the Canucks are probably going to win the division, 60% mm-hmm. chance. And they're probably not going to win the President's Trophy. They're probably not going to win the conference.
Yeah. Winnipeg and Dallas will have something to say. Yeah, for sure.
Most likely they will probably face wild card one. If the season ended today, it's probably around where they'd end up. So wild card one is going to be either Vegas or LA from the Pacific. It's not going to be Calgary. They're not going to make it.
Yeah.
Edmonton's past them. They're flying. They're going to finish second or first in the Pacific. So it's going to be Vegas or LA, or it's going to be, whichever team from the Central makes it. And that's probably Nashville now. That is a 79% chance to be Nashville. So what would you rather at that point? Keep in mind, Nashville's won 8 straight to get to this spot.
And that's what I was, it's funny because all this time when the Canucks were atop the league, I can't speak for you. I was assuming, hey, they're going to be number one in the conference. So they're going to get the second wild card team, which will likely not be a Pacific team. It'll be like the fourth best team in the Central that might be crappy. But now two things are probably going to be true. They might not win the conference. They might finish as the second division winner. So you're right. Second seed, get the first wild card. And that could be any of those three teams. I think I still would rather the Canucks in order play Nashville, LA, Vegas. Even though Vegas is struggling, they just scare me in the playoffs. So in order, I would go Preds, Kings, Golden Knights in order in terms of who I want them to face. I can't guess who they are going to face because it's so tight right now. They're one point apart for the three teams.
Yeah, the pedigree matters to me too. That is concerning to me. Like Vegas has been there. Adin Hill kind of scares me right now the way he's been playing. Whereas, I mean, obviously UC Saros gets there too, right? So goaltending can be scary. So that's a problem too. But I think every team here sort of has, you know, at least decent goaling or goaltending. So maybe that's not as big of a thought as it might be for me. But it's interesting. It's at least coming down to the wire, right? We're going to see over these last 19 games for the Canucks and 20, 22, 23 games for these other teams. You know, we'll see how things start to shape up, right? Does Edmonton make the most of those game in hands? Because while the Canucks schedule is pretty hard coming up, from a scheduling perspective, it's really nice, right?
Yeah.
They play, you know, they just played Sunday, Tuesday, they play Thursday, Saturday, but then they get another 3 days off, right? They play Saturday the 9th and they don't play till Wednesday the 13th.
Yeah.
Then they have another 2 days off and don't play till the 16th. Then they have another 2 days off and don't play till the 19th. And then they have another 2 days off between the 25th and 28th and the 28th to the 31st. Like they have so many rest days this month. They only play what, like 9 games, 10 games in all of March. Maybe that's wrong. 12 games in 31 days in March.
But you can make a good point because by contrast, if Edmonton has 4 games to make up on us, that means they have to play 4 more games in the last 7 weeks of the schedule, and I heard that their March is a lot crazier compared to ours. Obviously, you just laid it out. And then in April, Edmonton has 3 back-to-backs in April. So that's
Edmonton tough. Has 15 games in March. So a game every other day for all of March.
Yeah.
And then, they have 10 games in April. And that's only 18 days.
Yeah.
They have a very, very compressed schedule. And there's some tough opponents in there too for them, right? And you think about it, like, oh, the Canucks have a tough schedule coming up. Most teams play the same other teams around the same times that are in the same division, because usually divisions sort of travel a slight delay and go to the same teams for scheduling purposes. The Canucks are going to get a lot of rest this month, and it gives them an edge in a lot of these games, I'd have to imagine, because they've gotten through so many already.
Okay, let's do this. The quickest preview ever. We just give our record predictions for LA and Vegas away, then Winnipeg at home. Then we'll do 3 minutes on trade deadline potential, like just what we expect. And then last 10 minutes, people. How does that sound?
Sounds good. They're going 2-1 this week.
Who's your one?
It's LA.
Yeah. I agree with you. 2-1.
I don't know why. I just got a feeling that they beat the Jets. I don't know if that makes sense, but I just feel it.
You know what's funny? That big gap, Parker, that you're talking about between the Jets on the 9th and then Colorado on the 13th, those 3 days, that's to work in all their trade deadline acquisitions in a practice.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be nice.
Who's it going to be?
For the week. And then obviously, a big trade deadline addition coming up is Carson Soucy, right? He's in the corner. Yeah. That's going to be big. I don't know where we're at on Dakota Joshua. He's probably a couple weeks, I imagine, still. Sure. But those will essentially be trade deadline additions. Tyler Myers, who knows?
And I would say, Canucks fans, don't be disappointed. I'll just say, I don't think you can expect a big one. Our big trade was the Elias Lindholm trade that happened 3 weeks ago. Like, think about what we gave up. That's something you see around trade deadline. Don't forget Zadorov was a big move. It didn't cost us too much, which was good. So what do the Canucks have in terms of assets? If you don't want to give up Velander, Lehkäinen-Mäki, and you don't want to give up your 2025 first, then really you don't have a lot of rich assets to play with. And anyone that's on the roster now that you would actually consider trading doesn't have a lot of value. So I guess I'm just setting us up. Let's not set ourselves up for disappointment. It's got to be depth moves. I don't see them doing anything crazy.
They're getting Gensel. They are. Came out today. They're one of 6 teams in on Gensel.
We're still in? We're still in?
Yeah, that was today. That news.
What are we giving them?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. Pierre LeBrun said today, or tweeted out today. Let me get the exact quote. The sense is the Penguins, after that road trip, have a very clear sense of what needs to be done before Friday's deadline, because the Penguins lost a couple of games. And charting a course accordingly. Exploring all options with view to bolster the club for the future. Hearing there's 6+ legit suitors for Gensel, Vegas, and Vancouver among them. And this was at 10 a.m. this morning.
Thank you.
This is very fresh.
Yeah. I tried to type, I'm with you, Leo, and then I forgot to press, I pressed enter too early. Leo says, I have a hard time thinking we could land Gensel. We don't have the assets for it.
It would be a real all-in. it would be the rest of the farm, right? Unless you're trading your 2025 first and then a mid prospect, but that feels like that's because then you don't have anything to leverage next year, right? And you might not have Gensel. You're not keeping Gensel and Lindholm, I imagine. That's getting expensive. So
good point.
Yeah. I don't think it'll happen, but if it does, suddenly I'm a lot more interested in this playoff push, because now it's okay. Now the chips are in, right? Let's see what happens.
Handicap Phil Kessel signed to the Canucks by Friday out of 100%.
Is there any reason that Friday would be a deadline?
Then he can't play in the playoffs if he's not, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You have to be signed to a roster that's why the urgency.
I didn't know that. I was thinking in the NFL, it's not the case too. It's weird.
Oh, okay.
In the NFL, like, people sign people in the playoffs. Like, you'll be in the NFC championship game. You'll sign somebody.
You can sign Russell Wilson if you want to. Oh, sorry.
You sure could, for league minimum, because Denver has to pay all the contract.
Wow.
Yeah. It's, I would probably go 80%.
80% yes, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm with you. It feels like everything's pointing to it, right?
No risk, right? You give him $1 million pro, you only have to pay him a quarter of that because we're three quarters through the season. 250 yeah, grand for a playoff
way,
run.
One way, $1 million, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And yeah, that's there's no risk except it's going to cost the ownership $1 million. But they're spending $150 million in the arena right now. So we're good.
Yeah, that's why my ticket price is going up tomorrow. But that's for another vlog.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they finally see, like, ooh, we're getting playoff money. Let's
yeah, and to the holders. Yeah, I'll be careful. I won't get on the soapbox, so I don't have to get off. But I will say they haven't raised prices, at least for season ticket members, for the past 5 or 6 seasons because the team has been so bad. So we were expecting the big jump, and I think it's going to happen this year for sure. Yeah,
right. And what's I mean, honestly, I see they're adding cup holders. I won't lie to you. I literally got to the rink. I got a beer. I got triple O's. My dream combo when I'm 30 minutes early to the rink. Kicked my beer over, like immediately, stone cold sober. Just went to like put my like grab something from down and I just kicked my beer over and it was just gone. It was like there's like I drank like a third of it. Like there's like $15 gone. Cup holders would have been nice in that case. So I'm like getting a bunch of napkins and trying to clean up because no one else is there in my section yet.
Oh, good. So it didn't spill on the guy in front of his jacket or anything like that.
No,
or,
but there's just a puddle going down like 4 seats. It was a nightmare. So cup holders have been nice. And how often does it happen? Right. How many times have you had beer spilled on your back during a Canucks game? Right. Because someone tips it over or you like, or, you know, someone puts their purse down next to you and someone behind you knocks beer over. Right. Like it happens so often. The cup holders seem so basic and should have been there forever.
People, we promise we'll get to you in 30 seconds, but Parker, I got to tell you this story. I may have told it on my show. Sean got the Elias Lindholm stick, right? In Seattle from the stick boy. So, and I have my nachos at on the floor. So he gets the stick, he shows it to our buddy. And as Sean grabs it back from me, he drags it across my nachos. I puts the nachos all over my runners. And then he lifts up this little stick. He's got nacho sauce, salsa sauce on the white tape on the blade.
That's tough.
So he was scrubbing. It was just the stupidest thing. He was euphoric. He was ecstatic that he got the stick. And the very first thing he does is he drags it through my nachos. Yeah. Awesome.
Amazing. Yeah. It's a good story at least. Yeah. That's
it was pretty funny.
Yeah. So it'll be nice though. Hopefully, you know, I don't have really an issue with the comfort of the seats, but they're old.
Yeah.
You know, get some new, nice, comfortable seats. You know, it should be a state of the art arena. So it's, I'm excited for them to make that award. Honestly, that every time I get in there now, because I've only been to 2 games this year, like I look at the I look at the screen, I'm like, oh my god, it's huge.
It's
awesome, especially like sitting like upper bowl center. That thing is it's like past the blue line.
You can't see the other. It's nuts. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we are answering the people, or else they're gonna get mad at us.
Yep. Do you have anything starred? Anything that you've looked at?
No, I just want people to start asking stuff right now.
Okay, if you have been asking questions, we didn't see them. I am scrolling up to try to find some, but while I do that, Clay will look for any new ones that come up.
That's right. I'm ready. I'm ready for any new ones.
Any questions? Edmund asks, are you guys worried still about Lindholm not making much of an impact? And are you concerned about the money that Hronek's camp wants in the $8 million range? Honestly, I wasn't worried about Lindholm. I'm a little more now. As every game goes on, I think my worry will increase a little bit until he produces a little bit more. But we haven't, I don't think we've been concerned yet.
No, and we both talked about how he had his great season playing with great players in Tkachuk and Gaudreau, and he got to play with Petey for a little bit, but they didn't have another great player with them because Miller and Besser, you don't split them up. So unless he plays with Miller and Besser, he's not going to get a chance to play with two great players on his line. So I just think it's his combination. I think he hasn't been great, but he also hasn't had the best line mates either. Cause we've talked about this. He's not the best creator. He needs guys to create for him and with him. And he can't be the one doing the creating.
Yeah. He could really use a Guentzel.
I got a quick one, Jack. No, the black seats will be there by the next season, not the next home game. It takes a while to rip everything out.
I think
out,
said over the next
in.
Two seasons. They might only be doing one bowl each summer, but I'm not entirely sure.
That's a good point, too. How do you fix the power play, Parker? How do you fix the power play? Well, you don't make two units where you split your five best guys up. That's one thing
That was silly. You put your five best players out there and you go back to what worked. Like it worked very well early in the season and teams clued in, right? That was the problem, is that you got stale. So they've tried to shuffle all these things to fix it and that hasn't worked. I think you go back to what made it good and you just move more. They did it a bit in Anaheim. We saw a lot of, like, there was constant skating, at least on one of the power plays. And even if they didn't score on that one, like it creates confusion, right?
Yep.
You know, if you just cycle it, the passing lanes are usually open around the outside, right? You can create some movement, try to find the one dangerous pass and make something work. Splitting things up, putting two defensemen out there, like don't mess with sort of the basics, right? Mess with the plays, draw something new up. Right. Get a new, leave JT Miller where JT Miller is going to score. Right. Get Elias Pettersson to, get that spot under the crossbar back that he was so good at one point.
Sure.
I think there's a few things that could be improved, but I think the big thing is just getting more pucks to the net and getting more movement, right. Creating more high danger chances.
I love it when they bring a guy to the top and he just skates through the seam. They don't do that enough. So I'm with you. Out of 10, how much do you want Anthony Duclair on this team? Out of 10.
I like Anthony Duclair. I don't know what the cost would be. If there was no cost involved, I would say like an 8 or a 9.
Kessel out of 10?
Genuinely, hockey-wise, 6.5.
Yeah.
Content-wise and just like for entertainment value, 11.
Love it. Marcus Pettersson.
He's really good. He's a good player. Again, probably around an 8. But again, I always want good players on my team. Yeah, but I don't know. I think those would be, at least Marcus Pettersson seemed like he'd have a reasonably high cost.
Yeah, I agree with you. We talked about this, but yeah, we've been saying not just tonight, but for the past few weeks, the two depth moves they can make are a bottom six, middle six winger, just for more depth, and then some more insurance on D. You might not even, if it was with Susie back, you might even not even have to touch the top six, but you do want a bit more insurance than Juleson and Friedman as your 7-8, I think.
Yeah, I think they're okay on D once Susie's back, right?
Okay,
that's fair. Because they do, like, Juleson's been good. Friedman's been fine. I think Matt Irwin's probably serviceable if it really comes down to it. And he'd probably be playing like 8 minutes in the playoffs anyways, right? Because Quinn Hughes is going to play 30. I think they need more winger depth. Like, they need a spark in the bottom six right now. And I think a lot of that's missing Dakota Joshua. I didn't realize how valuable he'd be going into this season. But man, like, that the bottom six just doesn't seem to have any life right now. Like, how invisible have Sam Lafferty and Ilya Mikheyev been? And even Garland, other than that one goal, like, he just doesn't look the same without.
Yep.
Like, it feels like Nils Höglander is the only one playing when any of those guys are on the ice.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Nils Åman has been pretty invisible. Arshdi Baines was a fun experiment, but he's clearly not there yet.
Yeah.
Linus Karlsson, again, like, he's not there yet. These aren't guys you want playing.
PDG, yep. I'm with you. Yeah,
Phil DiGiuseppe, I'm a little higher on him as of like recent, but even then, like, yeah, he hasn't been as visible. I could really see them, like, again, Kessel is one name. I think they just need to introduce a couple of sparks into the bottom six. Have guys you can cycle in and out if you need to. Give them a little bit more life.
Yeah. Demko, Miller, or Hughes, who's your MVP for the season so far?
For this season?
This season.
Oh, it's
for it started off Hughes for sure, like, without a shadow of a doubt, but
yeah,
it slowed down.
Miller's
a little bit
the life of the offense right now, and he has seemingly been just carrying the team where he needs to.
Yeah,
but I also don't think this team is in the spot they're in without the way Quinn Hughes has been playing. Okay. I mean, like, he's genuinely been fantastic. I think most valuable is technically Quinn Hughes, but I think you could easily make the argument for either of the other two.
Sure, that's fair. Hey, Ricky, we touched on this. Yeah, not intentionally being set up to fail, but he hasn't had the best line mates for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think part of that, like, they want to see what he can do, right? Hey, can you, if we put you on the third line, can you drive it, right? I saw some tweets from Jay Fresh earlier today, because he's a Penguins fan. So he was talking about, like, Derek Brassard, for example, when they made that addition, right?
Yeah.
And they thought, like, they were like, oh, this is going to propel us to another cup, right? He was a second line winger that they were bringing in to put on their third line. And he fell off a cliff, right? He was never the same after he got to Pittsburgh. And I think they're trying to see if this is going to be a similar case, right?
Yeah.
Is he going to, you know, can you take the second line guy who's used to playing with scores and can you put him on the third line to generate some offense of his own? If that's not the case, then okay, we're going to have to make some adjustments and we're going to have to make him work with Miller and Besser or Pedersen and X winger. But again, they do still have 19 games to figure it out, which is scary, but it's still, they still have a month and a half to get that working right. And they have a lot of practice time this month. So hopefully that helps.
I like this question, onwards and upwards. Benning's best contract. To me, the Demko one sticks out right away. First you have to make a choice between Demko or Markstrom before the expansion draft. And then when you get Demko for five times five, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I think that is the answer. I don't know. Are there any other contracts that are active that aren't dead?
No. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah, I don't know.
There are, other than like Poolman. Was Poolman a Benning contract?
Oh, good question. I don't know.
I don't remember. Either way, there's none that are really active currently. So it's kind of hard to think that far back. I can think of some weird names, but
Toffoli or Vetrano, if you had to pick one. I'm going Toffoli.
It's really hard. I think genuinely skill wise, it's probably Toffoli.
Yeah.
But I like the way Vetrano plays a lot.
I didn't think Vetrano was great last night though. It's one game. I didn't think he was great last night.
No, but he was, think of how good he was in the All-Star game with the boys. No, I think how old is Vetrano? He's younger, right? Like he's
29.
Yeah, he's 29. Yeah. What's Toffoli?
31. Well, dang,
he'll be 32 in April. I thought he was older than that. Man, we let that guy go.
I know. That was the summer of suck.
Bring him home.
Okay.
Bring him home. All right. Why not?
All right, one more question. Let's find one more good one. I like this one. Do you see a possibility where Hornet gets bridged for 3 years as opposed to long term?
Well, if this management group is defining a window, like I described earlier, using the Demko and Hughes contracts, then they could go that route. I have no good gauge on what Hronik is going to make.
Me neither.
Like it's a really hard one to judge because he's like he's all numerically. Everything numerically points to him being elite. However, he struggles at times defensively, especially on like odd man rushes. He plays pretty poorly, but he's very good offensively. But also, he's getting a lot of points from playing with Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, man, how do you balance all of that? Right. Because if you told me, hey, he's going to get paid $8 million a year for 8 years because he's a 70 point defenseman right now, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. And if you told me, yeah, he's going to make 5.5-6 because of the issues in his defensive zone and because he's being carried by Quinn Hughes, I look at him and be like, yeah, that makes sense. Right. So I have, this is a really hard one for me to judge. I'd love to see some projections, like analytical projections, not just like opinion projections. Cause I really don't know where they'd land.
And Parker, all things being equal, and this is, I was trying to figure this out when I was going through Chris Gere's litany of tweets. All things being equal, a 3-year bridge contract versus a 7-year long term, what usually is the higher AAV? Do you get higher when you extend longer, or do you get higher? I mean, the higher salary when you bridge. What generally is the case?
It's super dependent on you sort of have to project each year, right?
Okay.
If it's a 24-year-old, the more years, the more expensive, right?
Because that makes
sense. Buying his prime essentially. But for a 29, 30-year-old, right? Let's say a 30-year-old in this case, he's going to be better in his 30 to 34-year seasons than his 35 to 37-year seasons, right?
Yeah.
So in theory, you would add more years to bring the cap hit down.
Okay.
If you are, like, let's say you say, oh, hey, we have a, it also goes to my example, where you say, hey, we have a 3-year window, right? Yeah. Well, we can sign a guy for 3 years and he's going to want every penny possible, or we can give him financial security, give him 7 years, cut the AAV down so we can compete now. And then by the end of that contract, when he's not playing that well, it doesn't matter anyways, because we're out of our window.
Okay. Right? Okay.
There's a lot of weird things to balance there.
So to wrap up this Chris Deere conversation, Petey was neither 25 nor was he 33. He was only 21. So is Chris Deere arguing that by going bridge that they got him, they basically the combined of his bridge plus his new one, that's cheaper than if they had gone long-term? Like,
I guess so. I think more of the argument was, hey, by going bridge, his cap hit right now is 7.35 instead of being 10. And with those savings, they've now built a competitive team. And it's like, well, what did you do with those savings when you were there?
Right. Yeah, I got, gotcha.
You didn't do much.
Well, thank you. Now I can go back and reread his tweets and understand what the heck he's talking about. Okay, good.
Excellent. All right. I think we should probably wrap up there. We're a bit over time. Folks, thank you all for joining. If you enjoyed the show, make sure you hit like. We like getting those numbers up. Leave a comment, hit subscribe, do all that good stuff. We're here every Monday, 10 p.m. We'll be back next Monday as well. Trade deadline. That'll be the big one next week. We'll break down everything the Canucks do or don't do at the trade deadline, and we'll know the final roster. Do they have Phil Kessel? Do they go crazy and go for a Jake Guentzel, or do they go more reasonable and pick up, you know, even a Toffoli or go like a Jordan Greenway route? You know, there's a lot of options the Canucks have, and it'll be fun to recap on Monday. Clay, any parting words this Monday night?
Just in a good mood. Canucks making some moves. It's nitty gritty time. Yeah, I just love the fact, even if we're not winning the division for sure, which we should, but we're not winning the entire league for sure, whatever. The fact that we can look at the standings every single day and say, oh, this means that, that means this. That's a very, very cool place to be right now, unlike anything that we've experienced since you and I have been doing the show together. So it's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, folks, have a good night. We'll catch up with you next week. See you next time.